time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 25th of June 2011. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. On Saturday, the 25th of June, Emma Boer Warner talked to Linda Savage from Living Without Violence, Millie Watkins from the Community Sustainability Group, James the Gardener from Greenspace Landscape, and Brenna Gotche and Alice Doig, who both have exhibitions on at the Red Shed.
I'd like to welcome Linda Savage to the studio. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Emma.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you, doll.
Good. Just checking that your levels are on high enough. So that's good. So you're coming here with your Living Without Violence hat on today, aren't you?
I am indeed, yes.
And so we need to talk about this fundraiser. So you've got a fundraiser that's going on next Saturday, week today, and it's a school disco.
Yeah, it's a school disco theme for adults. Yep. And it's on Saturday, July the 2nd.
Which is next Saturday, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. It starts at 7.30. Well, doors are open at 7.30. So you're welcome in anytime from then on. It goes on till 12 o'clock. Tickets are $20. They're going fast. So get to Shop the Rock to get them. It's the only outlet that's selling them.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'll better go down and get mine. I've heard they're going really well.
Yeah. There'll be crowds. I'm telling you, crowds. we've got great DJ, DJ Jace. He's going to be starting off the event. We have On the Rocks, which is a covers band, really good band.
Yeah, I've heard they're really good, actually. They're really fun, aren't they? And upbeat, so that should be great.
Yeah, we've got Ian Simpson in the band, and Ian Simpson seems to be everywhere. I saw him in Malone's a couple of Fridays ago.
Yeah, he gets everywhere,
he
that
does,
chap.
Doesn't he? Yeah. What can we say? He puts himself about a bit. But
he does.
Hey, I hope he's not listening.
Musically speaking.
Of course.
In case his lovely partner's listening. We're only talking musically speaking.
And a very talented guy there. They're a really talented band, and they're really, really good. They've got some great music lined up. We've got Philip Simons, who's emceeing. He's principal for the evening.
Oh, he's principal,
is he? He's principal.
Oh, lovely.
So he will be in character all evening.
Oh, great. That'll be funny.
And we all know how talented and funny that guy is. We've got a head girl and a head boy.
Oh, really?
Which will be helping. And my good self is going to be deputy principal, just making sure that everything is going well behind
the scenes. Now, I've heard a sneaky little rumour that there's going to be a few little scenes played out.
There is one little scene that's going to be played out by father and son team, and that's a character team, not in real life.
Yes, I was going to say, because Ella Deer was talking about that previously.
Ella Deer and John, as his father, is an interesting
John Brown.
Yes. So that's a really good skit.
Yeah, they're both really good actors.
Absolutely, so, very funny. And so we've got that going on. We've got a dance competition, so great dance-off. Best dancer, boy and girl. Best dressed.
So can we bribe the judges for that, do you think?
No, you can't.
It's no bribing?
Absolutely no. No, it's all above board.
Okay. But it's school, so, I mean, anyone can cheat.
Well, yes.
I mean, you know, obviously that wouldn't be myself.
No.
I wouldn't need to.
No, because you'd be able to strut your stuff with the best of them, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Years of training, years and years.
So we've got that. We've got some great raffle prizes. Let me just tell you about this top prize, okay?
Oh, go on then. If you must.
It's amazing. It's two. Just picture it, okay? You've got your ferry ticket and you're going over to Auckland. You're walking up to Queen Street and you've got your tickets in your hand for the show Man in Black, which is the Johnny Cash story.
Oh, yeah.
So you watch the Johnny Cash story, you walk down the road and then you take yourself into the Hilton Hotel. And they give you the key for the executive suite. And you
go
up.
No way.
You stay overnight. You get up. You go to their restaurant. You have a beautiful breakfast. You walk back down to the wharf. Give your ferry ticket over and you come home.
Oh, how fantastic.
All donated prizes. So that's
the top brilliant.
Prize.
Oh, that is a fantastic prize.
It is a fantastic prize.
Really nice you've done that as a package rather than split it up and have sort of, you know, theatre tickets or a hotel night.
Yeah, we did that.
That's really nice.
To make it special.
Wow, the Hilton, very nice.
And the executive suite, no less.
Oh, yes. I would fit in well there, everybody. Yeah, it's a word.
Yes. Only the best for you, darling.
Yeah. Oh, so fantastic. Mm. So that'll be going, the raffle will be live on the night.
Absolutely.
So buying raffle cancel tickets there and then.
Yeah.
And so tickets are only available at Shop the Rock. So people will have to make sure that they make sure that they can get their tickets, yes, and stuff. But as I have heard that they're going really well. I know, yeah, loads of people that are going already, and people, yeah, there's a little bit of a buzz starting on it.
Yeah.
People have been talking about it.
Yeah.
So quite a few people are going in fancy dress, but it's not, yeah, compulsory, no, to do so.
And remember as well that, you know, at school discos, there were also teachers. So we've got somebody going as a gym teacher, which is really quite, he looks quite hysterical with his whistle. So, and there's somebody else that's talking about going as the school nurse.
Oh, really?
You know, so,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, use your imagination.
Yeah, and we've had some great support from the island. Wild on Waiheke donated us a whole barrel of their pale ale, which is just amazing. The vineyards, some of the vineyards have given us some beautiful prizes. Man of War Bay, Miro, Peacock Sky. You know, they're just some of them. I mean, I haven't got the list in front of me, but we've had some great help from the island.
So let's talk about why it's important the community support, because it's not just any old fundraiser, is,
no,
it? It's Living Without Violence, but there's a real reason for, yeah, it because,
absolutely,
of the... Yeah, talk about that.
Well, basically, government has made some cutbacks across our sector. And one of the income streams that they've taken away is the information and advice income stream. And this income stream went towards keeping the office open, you know, mm, so people come in and we offer information and advice. So without this money, it basically means that we're going to have to close our office on a Wednesday. We can't afford to keep our office open 4 days a week.
And that will be a real loss to the community, because there are a lot of people that need that help, yeah, and advice. I know whenever I've volunteered for the organisation, and if I've ever been around the office space, there are always people, all day, there's a steady stream of people coming in and out, needing advice, whether it's for themselves or for a family member or a friend, somebody they're concerned about, or just a bit of support, a bit of a shoulder. So, I think it's really important. So do you think from this fundraiser alone, are you hoping to raise enough money for a year to keep the Wednesday open? What's your plan?
Wonderful. It would be absolutely wonderful. But we need about $6,000 in total to keep it open for a whole year. So we're being realistic. We're thinking we're not probably going to raise that much. We have applied to another funding organisation to help us a little bit more. So it's a free service that we offer, you see.
Yeah,
and
I know.
We have talked about whether we charge a COHA. But it then makes it inaccessible to some people.
Exactly.
And that's,
and also particularly the people that may well need,
yeah,
the help and support.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're really reluctant to go down the road of a fee service.
No, I can really understand the reticence, because once you start down that road, it does change things ever so slightly, doesn't it? Right. Okay. So everybody that's listening, it's really important that people support Living Without Violence. They do a really, really fantastic job within the community. And as Linda says, they are a free service available to all, and particularly those people that really need that help and support. So come down, get your glad rags on, come down, have a bit of a boogie next Saturday night. It's going to be hysterical. I've heard some of the stories off air of some of the things that are going to happen, and it's going to be great. It really is. And tickets are going really fast, so and there's a limited number as always with any event, so make sure that you get down to Shop the Rock. $20, that's all it is, and you're supporting a really good cause. In fact, you know what? Even if you can't go next Saturday, go and buy a flipping ticket. Go and buy a ticket and donate a little bit to the raffle. Why not? Hey, get a raffle ticket. Pop into Living Without Violence. I'm sure they can sort you out with that. So, yeah, that's next Saturday. Thanks very much for coming in, Linda.
Thanks, Emma. I really appreciate your support.
I'd like to welcome our next guest into the studio. Hello, Millie.
Hello.
Say again, a bit louder into the...
Hello.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, just checking the mic was working there. So just make sure you're right up to it. That's beautiful.
Okay.
So thank you very much for coming in on this blustery Saturday morning. What's going on with the weather, hey?
I know, but at least we've got sun.
Yeah, we have... Well... Have we? Yes.
For
yes,
now.
there is a bit of sun. I got caught in the rain coming in.
Yeah.
So yeah. But hopefully that'll go away. So you're coming in to talk about the Community Resilience Working Group that you're in the process of you have set up, haven't you?
Yeah, we've started meeting. We've had our second meeting last week. And basically we've been doing some different programs over the last couple of years, and so out of that has come a desire from a lot of different people to be meeting regularly to talk about personal preparedness, emergency preparedness, and community resilience.
Okay, so a lot of people that I've mentioned community resilience to, they haven't actually understood the term. So do you want to explain what sort of that encompasses?
Yeah, and this comes out of some involvement that I had with the civil defense group. I went along to a lot of the meetings and became very interested. And so they have their first tenet is YOYO, you're on your own, which is a bit of a daunting thought when you're thinking about an emergency. But what they're trying to say is we have limited resources, so it's on you to create a network that works for you. Yep. And so the buzzword in civil defense right now is resilience. And
right.
So let me just talk a little bit. I'll just, you know, make a statement about resilience.
Yeah, please do. Go for it.
We are more resilient when we have multiple sources and systems to supply a needed item, rather than being dependent on a single source. So we want to have more than one way to fix a certain problem in place. So we want to not be dependent on one solution, and then if that fails, everything falls apart. So let me give us a specific example with the old Auckland City Council. Their only solution for Waiheke is basically sit tight, Waiheke, and Auckland City Council will bring out on a barge everything you need. And that made me vaguely uncomfortable because I thought there was a lot of dependence placed on one possible solution, which, you know, for any number of reasons could go wrong. And so I started to think about how would we on Waiheke start to build up some systems here where we would be resilient and able to function in a time of emergency. And it's not, what I'm talking about is not actually just limited to emergency preparedness. So I'm just giving one example.
Yeah, this is just an example. I get that. Yeah.
So we're more resilient when we have a strong local community with deep connections. So that's another aspect.
That sounds logical.
And we're more resilient when we're in control of how our needs are met and when we can do things for ourselves. So there are a lot of issues that have not actually been discussed to this point that have to do with meeting our needs. You know, should something go wrong on Waiheke? So, for example, we are dependent on supplies of food being regularly delivered, and we go to the supermarket as if we were on the mainland and we pick up our groceries. But it's difficult for all of us, I think, to consider what might happen if for some reason a boat wasn't able to come and what we would do then. And so when you put yourself into that frame of mind, you start thinking about a what if. And so some solutions come to mind, such as, you know, building up what they call a deep pantry, where you buy a couple of extra things every time you go to the store and you put them in the back and you have some extra. So this would have been considered very just common sense, say even 30 years ago. But, you know, we have developed this just-in-time mentality where we go to the store, we buy what we need for the week. And, you know, often I can look at my pantry in the past and it's been empty at the end of the week and ready for the next top-up. So that's been one of the things that has been a part of my preparedness is just, you know, doing a little bit all the time. So what happened with a good friend of mine is we started calling each other kind of on a weekly basis, and we would say to each other, well, what if this were to happen? What, you know, how would we deal with that? And it was really comforting when we started troubleshooting just she and I together, because she'd relate her concerns. I might have a solution, you know, or an idea.
So you were kind of brainstorming possible scenarios.
Yeah. And it really is just down to brass tacks and just basic things like petrol or food or water or just, you know, what if the electricity was off for an extended period of time or, you know, any of these things. And so we started to feel a need and a potential to bring in other people and to get other people's ideas and to benefit, you know, as we come together. So there are a lot of people who don't really want to hear about that. They're not interested. And
do you think that's fair, Millie, or what do you think that might be?
I don't know that I don't want to make a judgment on anyone, just that I've heard from people, I'm not that concerned about that.
Right.
I think we all have different levels of concern.
Yeah, and different amounts of things that we can deal with in our everyday life, I guess.
And not to say that that person might not have a plan in their mind that would be just fine for them. And so this was when we started to talk about beginning a community resilience working group. It was about people who were more interested in actually dealing with Waiheke's situation and being pragmatic and common sense about the things that we commonly recognized, that we just say, you know, maybe not everyone recognizes, but a certain group might recognize that, and then to be able to take steps together. And what I've noticed is that when you get a group of people together and you start to talk about this, you get people sharing ideas that are of benefit to everyone. And sure, every meeting I've had has been hugely beneficial to me. So that's why I'm in it now, is for my personal, but also that connecting.
Yep, for the community.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's going to be more and more important as we go forward, is having those connections and maintaining them. And
so, yeah, I agree. So you've talked quite a bit about from the disaster planning side, and the food kind of is encompassed within that. But there are some other areas that you cover, like economic, financial. Can we move on and talk a little bit about those? Because I think that's actually a very interesting sort of facet of the group as well.
Yeah. And basically, you know, we want to keep it as open as possible to deal with what we are all experiencing.
So different issues as they may arise or be notified in the media.
Yeah. So then one of the issues would be things having to do with personal security. And those would be things like home and employment and just feeling generally secure about your economic future.
Right.
And so these are areas where people are sometimes feeling that they would appreciate knowing more about what is going on in the world with the economic picture. And then, so there's an aspect of us getting together and sharing information about what we see on the horizon and learning together. So asking each other, you know, tough questions about the economy and energy and the environment and how they impact us. And I think the other thing that we have, because we're able to pretty much run our lives right now independently, our mutual aid muscles are a little bit less exercised. So I can choose to participate in community activities, or I can really pretty much get along on my own. And really the times that we notice that we need other people are those times of emergency when some of our basic services that we count on are cut off. And then all of a sudden we start relying on each other. But in my daily life, I don't so much rely on anyone as a need. It's more of a choice. So that how do we start to develop those skills of mutual aid and relying on each other a bit ahead of perhaps a need in the future? So that's the other aspect, learning together and mutual aid. So when you're meeting regularly, and that is the big thing about Community Resilience Working Group, is having short, regular meetings.
Yeah.
So that the issues that are raised, we do it in a way that does not drag out, and you know, people may have things they want to concentrate more on, and those discussions can happen outside of the meeting. What we want to do is get together, have a short meeting,
and focused.
Talks about where we are and bringing in some elements, and then we move on, and so that it's more a regular part of your life that is not a burden, but that it's always in your mind. And so if I go back to just the issue about food, if you meet on a regular basis with a group and someone says, oh, well, you know, I have a technique where I, you know, buy one extra can of food every time. So if I hadn't thought about it before, maybe next time I go to the store, I might try that. So that it's the regular nature of hearing small ideas that slowly shift behavior towards a more resilient. And so that opposes, say, going to a one-off workshop that happens over a weekend where you get downloaded a lot of information.
And you forget half of it as soon as you go. You think, yeah, that was really good. But so you're talking about actually making something a part of your everyday life and including resilience, not as an add-on, but as an integrated part of just existing and living in the community. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And the third aspect of meeting together is that There are some changes coming down the road, and I'll just state my position that, you know, our housing is very overvalued, and we've had a lot of people buy into housing on Waiheke at the height of the market with jobs that looked very promising, as if they would stretch out into the future, and those jobs evaporated. They tended to be management jobs. And I think there's a lot of things going on in the economy right now in New Zealand that we are not necessarily aware of personally. And we also don't have a way of finding out. In other words, we don't know right now how much population we have lost. It's a very quiet exodus that is happening. But someone related to me a statistic where mortgagee sales for a month were about, and I'm sorry, I might get it wrong, but I think it was about 100 mortgagee sales, either for the month or for the year. But it was a significant rise in mortgagee sales.
For where does that cover?
Auckland? For Waiheke.
For Waiheke.
So this was over a period of time, was a significant increase in mortgagee sales, which means that people are leaving under distressed circumstances. And so those are members of our community that we've already lost. So the third aspect of getting together and learning and exercising our mutual aid muscles is social action, because this is an element that other countries are experiencing now at probably they're further along in the story, so that they've been foreclosed on and people are starting to fight back. And so some groups are finding that they're not willing to lose more members of their community. And sometimes these foreclosures need to have some input. So from the community and community support, everyone working together to see, you know, what is going on
here. That's happening particularly in certain socially deprived areas in the States at the moment. I've read some stuff about that happening, that sort of action groups, self-appointed action groups within the community are getting together. There's lots of mortgagee sales happening and people losing their homes and grouping together and helping families where possible to wherever possible to stay in their homes.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, the furthest extent of this for Waiheke is empty homes. And empty homes are a social disaster. They're a drag on the community. And, you know, there's just a lot of different reasons why you don't want that going on. So there are some cases where you expand from personal preparedness and, say, more local efforts to actually needing to move out into the national or even the global. But those things would come out of meeting regularly with a group of people, and those issues as they arise would then have a natural, you know, it would become obvious we need to do more. And I don't know necessarily right now what those would be for Waiheke. I think we'll find out as we go along and we're meeting what are the salient issues and what we think we can do as a group to meet some of those larger social issues.
That sounds fantastic. So what, tell me specifically about the group, because I bet there are people listening that are very interested in what we've been discussing and what you've been talking about and would be interested in how they could, you know, come along and maybe get involved.
So we meet alternate Wednesdays, and our next meeting will be on the 6th of July, and we meet starting at 6:30, and we aim to meet on a, you know, particular topic that we've, you know, decided on for about 45 minutes, and then with time to kind of just talk socially or just wrap things up for another maybe 20 minutes. So we want to keep it under an hour and a half so that people don't feel like it's a big chunk out of their week. So every other Wednesday at Waste Resource Trust office for now. And so the next meeting is going to be the 6th of July at 6:30 at Waste Resource office.
And that's in the Artworks.
In
the Artworks complex.
And at our last meeting, just this last Wednesday, what we set ourselves was just brainstorming a list of vulnerability and resilience on Waiheke. And one interesting thing that came out of it is we looked at things like transportation, how Waiheke is vulnerable in terms of rising gas prices, both for the ferry and what that does, and then for transportation just around the island. As we were naming these vulnerabilities, and then we went on to name the strengths, things like having our own water source is a great strength. Two things came out of that. One, with the vulnerabilities, discussions were started about possible solutions that didn't need to be talked about then, but that you could see that when you start to actually pinpoint what your vulnerabilities are, some solutions start to suggest themselves. So that was a really promising thing to come out of it. We actually felt like we had more things to work on in the future with the vulnerabilities. And then with the strengths, even though we might have a strength, there may be some things that we could do to tune up whatever that is. So in terms of water, it is a strength. Mm. But let's say there wasn't electric power and we have a lot of pumps. If you give a little thought about what you might do in case you didn't have power for the pump and things like that. So these are things that a lot of individual households have thought about and have dealt with on an individual basis. But as we get together and share information,
it's sharing that knowledge and that common those common ideas that people can go, oh, I hadn't thought of that. But so really a lot of it is about raising awareness.
Yes.
So people can come that haven't got any of these ideas, that don't really know much about it, and they can learn and share thoughts and ideas from different people that perhaps have tried things and, you know, have tried some things that won't necessarily work, and just basically to discuss. And I think what you're saying is it's a huge education project.
It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we're educating each other, really, because we've all got a piece of the puzzle. Everyone, you know, no matter who you are, has got a piece of the puzzle.
Now, for those people, because I include myself within this, that are very interested in this topic area, but can't necessarily commit to a fortnightly meeting, perhaps they commute and they've got, or they've got small children, or just have lots of other activities, you're creating a way that they can get involved with the resilience group, aren't you? Tell us a little bit about that before we wrap up.
Yeah. So we're working on right now developing two methods of people being able to keep in touch. So the first one that is should be done by the next meeting of July 6th, and that is a website that basically can be worked on by the people who are any member of the group, and it's not a membership. I mean, you know, you just say,
you just
I'd like to
along.
Be a member,
yeah.
You know. And so the information from a meeting, so like last week's meeting was about vulnerabilities and strengths. So that will be posted on the website, and then other people can go in and add to it. And so it can be a working document,
like a living,
that expands,
living document.
And the other piece, I'm, you know, a bit late to the party and only just attended a web conference recently, but it worked really well, I thought, for this kind of setup where you're sharing information. And I, you know, say I don't know everything about it, but I think we have the tools and have the ability to make a meeting that people can log into. So if you're in your home, you've just gotten home, you're not able, or you know, just you can't get out
for whatever reason. Mm-hmm.
And so the meeting's on at 6:30, and you can log on to the on the computer and then participate
remotely.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And give your input. At least if you don't even want to input, you can just hear what was said yourself, and then you've gotten the benefit of that.
Have it on mute. Yeah.
Of course, that said, the active participation of the largest number of people is the most beneficial, because then you're actually getting a lot of good. So the more input, the better. But it doesn't mean, you know, I mean, I don't always have something to say, so... You know, you can just go along and be just getting information.
Yeah.
And then when you have something to share.
Soaking it up.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds great. So if people want to find out more about that, how would you suggest they do that, Millie? Because the website isn't quite ready. It's nearly ready, isn't it? But
yes.
Not quite yet.
So you can just email me, milliepickle@gmail.com. And I can email a link once we get it up. So that's milliepickle@gmail.com.
Great.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. So that's the next meeting for those people that are interested is Wednesday the 6th. So that's a week on Wednesday. And that's at the Waste Resource Trust offices, which is in the Artworks Complex. And that's at 6:30. And, you know, you're only really needed there for about an hour. So if you're interested, pop along, come along and meet Millie and introduce yourself and see if this is something that you'd like to be involved in, or give her, drop her a line on an email. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Millie. Lovely as always to speak to you.
Thank you for having me.
And when it's up and running and you've got more to talk about, please do contact me and come back in again. I'd love to talk to you some more.
I will.
I'd like to welcome to the studio James from...
Green Space Landscapes.
From Green Space Landscapes. You're going to have to come right up to there. That's lovely. Thank you.
To the big blue thing.
Yeah, to the big blue thing. So how are you today, James?
I'm very well. Very well. Sun is shining and... And I can't see with my glasses, so I'll put that...
I need you right... we're not picking you up, actually.
Not picking me up?
No, we are now.
You are now? Okay. So I just...
Speak loudly.
Loudly? Like
well,
this? Really loudly?
Not really. Don't shout. Don't deafen me. I've got my headphones on.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm very well, Emma. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yep, I'm hoping... Oh, the sun's come out. I was just about to say, I'm hoping the sun's going to stay out as well. So I got caught in the downpour coming in, but you know me, I'm not one to complain. Yeah. So I won't tell you about how wet I got, but that's okay. Yeah. So let's talk about gardens.
Well, yes. Well, I mean, I suppose there'll be a lot of people at the moment not doing a lot in the garden sort of thing. Maybe... If they could keep off the, they'll probably be keeping off the garden as much as they possibly can.
I'm just going to alter that a little bit there. Go on, you keep talking.
Yeah, okay. Yep, all right. I'll hold it.
Yeah.
Like a musician. Yeah, no. Okay, so really what I'm talking about today, or we'll be talking about today, is things in the garden that you can do that don't involve wallowing in mud.
Try
the orange one.
Yeah, it's not picking up.
Okay. Is that better?
We'll talk.
Okay. So, lose the blue?
Yeah.
Okay, lose the blue. Okay, orange. Now, so really, if you are thinking about the edible type garden, we would probably, looking towards July, being the shortest day just occurring not so long ago, you can still plant things like garlic, okay, and that's one of the things you can really do at the moment. The black microphone. Okay, let's try the black microphone. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Yep, okay, all right, sorry. And things that you probably might notice in the garden that there is certain amounts of colour coming up at the moment. If you're in a garden that was established by a previous owner, you might find some bulbs and what have you starting to pop up in your garden. So things like freesias, daffodils and snowdrops. We can also... think about in the garden this month in the northern regions as opposed to the southern regions. We are the northern regions. What we need to do is really think about starting to prune our roses for July, so to get ahead of the new growth. So that would be something. If you have a couple of roses or many roses in your garden, you want to really think about pruning those roses this
right.
month.
Right, so now's the right time for that then?
Well, coming up in July, yes.
Yep.
So
we're nearly there. We're nearly July.
Yeah. You might have a few tired-looking roses out there that are just sort of looking at you rather longingly.
Sadly.
Yes. And, you know, to give them a good haircut is a good idea. And... It's probably quite hard to describe how to prune your roses, but if I just said some key words, such things as canes on roses are the main parts of the stem of the rose.
Okay.
And if you've got a rose, sometimes people don't prune their roses for a couple of years, and that's fine. But if you want to actually get a good good structural shrub for this coming months and you want to reduce disease, then it's a good idea to give your roses a good prune. And if you have six main leaders or canes, then you might want to reduce that down to three.
So actually pruning helps prevent disease, does it?
Absolutely, yeah. So
How come?
Well, really... what you're doing is you're cutting out disease. So the rose will pick up a few bugs. It might be on the leaves and what have you. And it's a really good way of getting rid of that. It's only something you'll probably do once a year, and the rest of the year you're deadheading, which is really just taking off the dead flowers from your plant. So really the other thing to do, besides cutting down to three main canes possibly, is to look at your plant, and if there's anything that's looking dead or dying or diseased or anything that's looking, you can cut that all out. And especially the types of branches that lead into the middle of your rose. So if you've got a rose with lots of branches and crossing over each other, then it's a really good idea just to cut those out. And that,
Okay, I didn't know that.
So anything that's touching together, which causes rubbing, and that encourages disease too. So those sorts of things when you're pruning roses. With regards to the lawns this month, you'll probably find that you've got less mowing to do, and that's great. You know, you can actually think about maybe sharpening your mower blades and mowing every 3 or 4 weeks.
How would one go about sharpening their mower blades then? Is there somewhere you can take it to, or are you assuming people have the facilities to do it themselves?
Well, you can pretty much do anything yourself if you've got the knowledge.
Yeah.
But you know, you can for you know, maybe $20 or $30 get someone to do it for you. So
right.
You know, there's plenty of there's 2 or 3 mower shops and on Tahi Road that you could probably take.
Of course,
it in.
Yes, yeah.
And a big good idea too to change the maybe clean your filter on your mower. Change the oil as well. That'd be a good idea too, because then it'll all run a little bit better, and you won't be sitting there with your. Because I know some people have mowers that are quite old, and you know, I've got one friend in particular who was whose mower only starts on certain days.
Certain days of the week without a why, yeah.
Yeah. And so be a good chance to do things in the garden, especially when you can't actually do much in the garden, then definitely it's a good time to look at maintaining your tools and servicing your things with motors. So chainsaws, things that you use, hedge trimmers, things that need a little bit of attention, then you can definitely get onto that this month in July. Now, the other thing that you could be doing or getting to the end of is pruning your fruit trees.
Yes.
So again, like the rose, you need to look at your, as one book I read once, look at your tree very critically, you know, and
give it a bit of a telling off.
Yes, and sort of really think about what you want your tree to do. Do you want it to be have a reduction in height? So when you pick your apples, you're not up on tippy toes, you're not having to get on a ladder. That'd be one thing to think about with your fruit tree. The second thing to think about, obviously, is, again, anything that's looking dead, dying or diseased, you couldn't cut that out. And third of all, if you have some large wounds on your tree after you've finished your pruning, then it's a really good idea to apply a little bit of paint, which you can get something from placemakers like Seal and Heal, and that just helps the tree wound to heal quickly. Now, the other thing you might want to start thinking about too, going forward into, you could be taking cuttings of things.
Yes. Now that's always fun, isn't it?
So there are a few gardeners out there that like to have a look at other people's gardens, and you know, you might find that there's something that you're particularly interested in growing yourself. Then you can still take cuttings of different plants, and you can simply buy getting a few pots. You might have a few pots lying around the house. You can pot them up. So just get a little bit of potting mix from again placemakers or the central landscapes, and then just pot up your cuttings, and you might find that things like rosemary and even lavender will be quite rewarding, because what you're doing is actually creating a plant from cutting, and then that cutting becomes something that you can add to your garden later on.
Cool. And there's certain ways of doing that as well, isn't there, for different plants? There's different ways and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, different. You can apply with a fresh cutting. You can actually put a hormone.
That's it. Yeah.
On the end of your fresh cutting, and then plant that.
Do you recommend that?
Yeah. I think that's quite a good way of speeding up the rooting of the tree or the plant. So, I think that's a really good idea.
Cool. Okay, great.
So there obviously are quite a few other things to think about in the garden, but really this time of year is when a lot of gardeners go on holiday.
Yeah.
I
mean, they go try to get away from the bad weather.
That's right, and there's only so many days in gumboots one person can have. So it's sort of, again, it's about doing things in the garden that you can, you're in preparation basically for the busy season again, which is every most, gardeners know that come August and then through to, the following June, you're pretty busy if you've got a big property. So plant of the month, Emma.
Oh, is it plant of the month time?
Yes,
it is. Oh, you snuck that one up on me.
Yes.
Plant of the month.
So plant of the month.
What is it this month, James?
Well, plant of the month is something called, it's actually called flax.
Flax?
But it's not the flax that we know of. It's from Taiwan or China. And
so it's a special flax.
Well, it doesn't even look like flax, which is even more confusing. So it is in fact a small shrub. It grows to about a metre in height.
Yeah.
And it's called Renwortia.
It's called what, sorry?
Renwortia indica. So it's Renwardtia, and then the next word is Indica. So I call it Renwortia indica. But this was a plant that was brought to my attention by a friend of mine. And the thing that I really like about this plant is it gives you winter colour. So as you might be looking around your garden and see a few old favourites, that like the old camellia and things that, they're doing their thing and they're producing a bit of colour there, which is very good. But if you want something with a more of a different type of winter colour, is a gold, yellow, orange bloom.
Oh, lovely.
So it kind of looks a wee bit like an impatient.
Yeah.
But it's bigger. And it's a nice alternative. And it's not invasive.
I was going to say, how quickly does it spread?
Not that quickly.
Right, so, okay.
Yeah. But it's something you could add to, say, a tropical garden.
Uh-huh.
Or you could just add it as a feature on its own. Next to some larger trees.
Yeah. Talking of the bloom, we've got some beautiful bloom on our palms at the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, stunning. And it's funny because actually I got home from work early yesterday, it being Friday, but we won't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was daylight, and I realised that I hadn't seen the trees in daylight for a couple of weeks because...
you're commuting
with the whole commuting thing and leaving in the dark and coming back in the dark.
Yep.
And so I'd seen the flowers there, but I hadn't noticed the stunning colour. It's kind of an orangey colour, really beautiful.
Mm.
So that was a nice little surprise for the day.
Yeah. Well, the succulents too. This time of year, that's when they really come into their own because you'll have those big. Red seed heads or orange seed heads.
Right, I haven't noticed any of those yet, but definitely on the palms. What kind of palms are they that I have?
They are aloe thraski.
That's it, yeah.
Thraski eye. They.
So they're only little.
Mm.
They're not very tall ones, are they?
Well, you've got two types, haven't you? You've got the big palm, the big one. Is that the one you're talking about, the big one? Yep. And then the smaller ones are the coral aloes.
No. I mean the standy-uppy tree.
The standy-uppy
palm,
ones.
Yes.
The standy-uppy trees. Yeah. And the coral aloe, they'll come along soon too.
Yeah, so. Great.
So, yeah.
Mm. Excellent. Mm. Oh, well, thank you very much, James. As
no
always, lots of fun talking to you, and I look forward to next month already. I wonder what plant of the month next month will be.
Yes.
Well, thanks very much for coming in, James. Have a great rest of the weekend.
No problem. Thank you.
I'd love to welcome into the studio my next two guests, the two Waiheke photographers, Brenner Gauthier.
Gauthier.
I nearly, oh, bugger. We were just trying to pronounce it, trying to teach me. And Alice Duke. Hi, very nice to meet you both. Well, I know you, Brenner, obviously, but nice to meet you, Alice.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome to the studio. So I'm just going to remind you both to speak right up to the microphone. That's great. So tell us a bit about yourselves. Or you go first, Brenner. What's your background, as if I don't know, but let's just pretend I don't.
Okay. Well, I was born in Amsterdam in Holland, and I came to New Zealand when I was six.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on this incredibly magical island now for, I think, going on 7 years now.
Right.
And
I thought it was longer than that.
Well, yeah, I think I actually made a mistake.
She's been fibbing to me for the last 5 years.
I've lost count, actually, but I know that it's many years now. It's definitely a hard place to get away from. And I studied photography at Unitech.
Did you?
Yeah, I studied contemporary photography there for 2 years. And I guess what got me into photography in the first place was I did a short course in documentary filmmaking. And I loved composing the images. It wasn't so much about the actual storytelling or putting the story together. It was the fact of the cinematography of it.
Oh, really?
And I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, maybe I should pursue that. And so I looked into, you know, photography courses.
So you originally thought you were going to go into sort of film documentary making?
Yeah, well, I was always really inspired by films in the first place and cinematography itself. And I decided to do a short course in filmmaking. But it was from then on, it was not so much the moving image itself, but the actual still
image. What you could
image.
Capture in a still image.
Yeah, I just felt like that was unlimited in the creativity that you could get in angles. So I was really inspired by that. And so I applied to go to Unitech. I had no idea about using a camera. I didn't even own a camera.
Wow.
So I went out and bought one of those throwaway cameras and ran around the island one day and just like took all these photos that I thought was amazing and went over to the open day and approached my then tutor, John Malcolm, with these like crappy little photos that said, hey, look, I really want to do this course. And he kind of looked through them and I could tell he wasn't very impressed.
Yeah.
And I failed getting in the first time and I was gutted. But they told me to go do a foundation course. And so I did a year and I got a certificate in the foundation course, which was great because I learned.
You learned all the basics of what you needed, how to operate a camera.
How to operate a camera. Mm. And you actually got a camera when you first started it, which I still have to this day. And I learned about the dark room and things like that. So it was really great. And so the next time I applied, I had an awesome portfolio and everything and got in. So
fantastic.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Excellent. Sometimes you have to really work for what you want. It doesn't always come
absolutely.
To you easily.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know the first time I auditioned for the drama school that I really, really wanted to go to, I didn't get in and I was devastated.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you have that that youth and that naive confidence, don't you, where you think, oh, of course, I'm really good. I can do anything I want to do. And then when someone goes, actually, you're not that good, now you need to go away and work at your craft.
You need to learn it.
I had to go and work in a theatre for a year and stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I totally get that journey. And it makes you value things even more, doesn't it, I think, when you have to work for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So Alice, bring you in onto the conversation there. Yeah, you can just pull that, be quite rough with it. You can pull it as close as you need to make yourself comfortable.
Cool.
So how did you get into photography and what's your background then?
Well, I was given my first camera at the age of 7.
Wow.
And have basically loved photography since then. I started playing around with my parents' sort of SLR when I was about, early teens, and just loved that, loved the control that you have with a fully manual camera. Did photography at high school and did really well, came top of my school for photography at high school.
Great.
Then took some years off and kind of went off and travelled and went to university and did a degree and still took photos whenever I was travelling and really enjoyed it, but perhaps didn't have the real confidence in myself to really pursue it.
Right.
Until I moved to Waiheke and kind of had a whole, what am I doing with my life sort of moment living on Waiheke. And I was like, right, I'm going to go apply to a course in town and start the photography thing. So.
Oh, fantastic. So what's your connection with Waiheke then? How long have you been here?
I've been here nearly 10 years, I think. Cool. It's sort of hard. I was a bit on and off for a while. I,
sure.
Would come for the summer and then go spend my winters down in Wanaka snowboarding and kind of moving around a bit. But then I settled here. I think on and off 10 years or a little bit less than that. And I did the Unitech course that Brenna did.
Oh, right.
I was a year ahead of her, but we sort of, so we had 1 year when we were commuting together and got to know each other.
Cool. And did you think that that had real value?
It was a great course.
Yeah, I think Unitech is a really great college, actually. It has some fantastic courses. I know the wildlife courses that I've been involved in and stuff, that they're really excellent there. And they've got some great tutors, some really cool people there.
Yeah, they're really passionate about what
yes.
they're doing. And
yeah.
I loved the way that we could do this two-year course as well, because I'd already been to university. I didn't want to go do another big degree.
No.
And I didn't want to do like a six-month sort of thing. I wanted to sort of decent.
Yeah, you wanted something in-depth that you could really get your teeth into. Cool. Okay, so what present or past work have you been involved in photography then, Alice? What have you done?
Well, I did a black and white Waiheke calendar, which I was selling at the markets, and a whole lot of other little prints and block-mounted prints and things. So that's been my... I've sort of had probably about a year, because I've had a child in the interim since graduating.
Congratulations.
Thanks. He's nearly... he's just turned three, so...
Oh, fantastic.
That's kind of taken up a lot of my energy. But I've just probably over the last year been able to get back into photography a bit, and I've started seriously thinking about getting into it a bit more, doing a few... I've shot a few weddings over this last season, and I've just kind of... trying out lots of different things to see where I want to kind of what direction I want to go in.
Sure.
And I had some work in one of the shared exhibitions down at the Red Shed, and that sort of is what's prompted Lyndall to let us have our own exhibition.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a moment, which is great. Fantastic. And what about you, Brenna? Let's talk about a little bit about your work that you've done.
Well, not so necessarily paid work yet, but I have been doing a lot of freelance portraiture work, a lot of promo work for local bands on the island. So I've done photos for band Clench.
Yep.
I did photos for...
I know, I saw those. They were great.
Yeah. And I made a little book for them and everything like that, and sort of really promoted their time when they were together. And I've done some work for The Dust, which was a band, did a lot of photos for them while they were playing, again, promo work that they could use. Paul Haynes approached me to do some photos for him as well.
Great.
And I'm about to go today, actually, and do some promo photos for... They were Mr. Last Boat, but I forgot what their new band is called. Ben and Ben.
Oh,
yeah. But anyway,
they have told me.
Yeah, it's up and coming anyway. So they've got a gig next month. So
yes.
I'm about to go and do some photos for them. And I just do a lot of portraits for people. So people seem to approach me and say, "Brenna, can you do some photos?" And even though it's unpaid, it's like you've got to start.
Oh,
you know,
totally. And, then, it's your passion, and that's how you how you get to be known.
Yeah,
as well.
And it's my favourite genre to do. And I will approach people myself and say, "Hey, look, can I do some portraits for you?" Because that's sort of the area that I want to go down in terms of photography as well. So, yeah.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. So is that the kind of work... Let's talk about the exhibition that you've got coming up at the lovely and wonderful Red Shed, run by Lyndall, the wonderful Lyndall. So is that the kind of work that you've got in there? You've got... you've got portraits?
Yep, it is. It is mostly portraits. It is a mix. I do have some abstract work in there as well. But it is looking at this whole series itself. It is very mixed. But it is mostly portraits, and it is there is also fashion in there as well.
Right.
Fashion.
So it's a mixture then.
It is a huge mixture of work that I did at Unitech, various portraits that I've done for people, and stuff that I've done over the years. So, I mean, for one example, I've got a portrait series that was inspired by film noir.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I put together this series of portraits of my very loving voluntary partner, who was a little bit apprehensive about doing it. But I turned him into this, like, romantic, you know, mysterious 1950s detective, you know.
Oh, wow.
And and so there's a lot of low lighting.
Mood creation,
which I loved in film noir. So there's a series of that as well.
Fantastic.
That's part of the exhibition. But it's hugely mixed work.
Right.
So you've definitely got to come in.
Definitely got to go and have a look
come
at
and
it.
Check it out, yeah. But I describe it, my work as sort of an inventive digital art. I'm very spontaneous in the work that I do. I'm inspired by music, I'm inspired by film, I'm inspired by fashion, and it's just, I mean, I call my series Frozen Instinct, because photography is about capturing a moment, but it's sure. also about an instinctual imagination that's come to you, that you actually go out and physically construct that moment for yourself, that it will ever be frozen in time, so... Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, I'm quite mesmerised with what you're talking about, actually. Oh, and for those people that heard my phone going off again, it's because Brent keeps texting me, and he was just letting us know that Mr. Last Boat has now got the, well, the name, let's call it the name, Feral Vessel.
Fantastic. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Feral Vessel. How exciting.
We'll say no more.
Band.
We'll say no more about the name or what I think of the name. But anyway, moving on. That's fantastic. Thanks, Brenna. So, Alice, what about the work that you've got in the exhibition?
Well, for me, this actually started as a Unitech assignment that we were doing, where I sort of started with about four images. And I had planned on expanding on it a lot more.
Yeah.
Except it's quite a time-consuming, full-on process to do. Like, I need tripods and lights, and it takes
right.
a long time and a lot of energy. And
it's a lot of setup time and preparation.
Yeah, it's very, very staged. Very, it has that sort of film still quality. And it's very much, rather than portraits, there are often people in my work, but it's sort of the actors creating these kind of uneasy, dark scenes that I'm creating.
Oh, wow.
And I would have loved to have expanded on it 3 years ago before I got pregnant, but I kind of got a bit sidetracked.
Yeah, as it does. Yeah, having a baby is kind of a bit time-consuming, isn't it?
But then it was actually Lyndall suggesting, because she suggested that we have an exhibition. It was months ago. It was ages ago, so we had lots of time to prepare. So I've
sure.
actually had the time to go away and do some more shooting, and I had a couple of others that I'd sort of worked on in the meantime that I sort of thought would fit into the style that I'm trying to create.
So is that how the exhibition came about then? Lyndall saw some of your work and suggested that you two get together and do that, or
yep.
were you already doing some stuff together?
I know we weren't, I mean, we knew each other.
Sure.
But we weren't sort of...
You weren't working or collaborating
anything,
yeah.
Not at all. It was Lyndall's idea entirely, and we're
Great.
Pretty happy about that.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, Alice approached me and asked me if I wanted to do it with her, and I was like, this is pretty much the first time that I will have my work shown, and
wow.
I was just so excited.
Yeah.
That even, you
oh,
know,
it's
Alice
such an exciting
had asked
thing.
Me
yeah.
that Lyndall has given us this opportunity to do it. It's just so cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So let's talk about the details of the exhibition so we can make sure that we can get lots of people down there. So it starts in July. And it's at the Red Shed, as we've been discussing, and that's 74A Palm Road, Palm Beach, in case anybody doesn't know, but I'm sure everybody knows where it is. So it's right at the end of Palm Beach, near where the turnaround bit for the bus stop is on the left. So what date is it starting?
Well, it starts on the 2nd, Saturday the 2nd, next Saturday.
Great.
And the gallery will be open from 10 till 4.
Yep.
And then we'll be having our opening party from 4 till...
Four till whenever the last person falls over. Yeah,
like
I've been to some of those. Yes,
And then the gallery's open every weekend from 10 till 4 until.
Yep.
So there's 5 weekends in July. So we're quite lucky. We've got 5 weekends.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? And your works will be available if people want to buy them. They can
Absolutely.
Actually purchase them from
we
the
encourage
Richard.
People to buy our work.
Yeah. Great.
Please. Yeah, and we also have, we're really, really, really lucky, and I just want to thank Logie from Lothrien Winery, sorry, I can't say that properly, who does the very famous Fijo sparkling wine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, won a gold medal. He is kindly sponsoring this exhibition.
Fantastic.
So there's going to be amazing Fijo wine available for all people that come along. And we also have the very famous DJ Navigator playing.
Oh, DJ Navigator. Now, yeah. I like him. Now, he is such a groovy mover on the dance floor. I had a good bop with him last Saturday night, actually. I did.
Yeah, he's incredible. He's got, you know, an incredible range of music.
Yep.
And, yeah, so he's going to be at the back.
Spinning some tunes for us.
So we're hoping it's not raining.
So it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, let's hope it's not. Oh, that sounds great. So if you want to go down to the opening, that's at 4 o'clock next Saturday. But other than that, the exhibition will be opening next Saturday and is available for people to see. And if they love the work and if you want to purchase a piece, then go for your life. Girls will be very, very happy with that. But most of all, they'll be really happy if you just come down and actually share sort of viewing their work and you know, talk about it and see what you think. So that'd be lovely. Well, thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you, Emma. We hope to see you there.
Oh yeah, for sure. I will definitely be there. Now, I'm a big fan of the Shed, and I'll definitely be there, and I love photography, so I'll definitely make my way down.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, Waiheke Radio's weekly magazine show, brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12, with the interviews replayed on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by the Humble Pie Village Butchery, where you'll find great cuts and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa, 372 8798.